Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What one did you listen to?
Yeah, I listened to one from Cervelo because it's so cool to hear about other guys and girls who are working in the same field as I do.
Yeah,
learn from them and even especially on the bike, I really like to listen to podcasts.
Yeah, so do I. Like when you're out cycling, it's really like satisfying to listen to podcasts, I think.
For me, I think somehow I'm a multitasker, so I will always try to get as much out of my time as possible. So if I go cycling, and in the meantime, especially when we were riding solo, the last bunch, as you know, then it was nice to listen to some podcasts as well, and sometimes it's just for fun, sometimes to hear from other people who are doing great, cool things. It's cool.
Yeah, it's always like, I have had loads of people said to me in the past, why don't you do a YouTube channel? And the big reason why is I'm not invested in it. I don't watch many YouTube videos. I've got loads of friends that do YouTube, and I'm kind of like, I don't even watch their videos. Like, I talk to them about the stuff they do. But podcasts, you can, as you said, you can do it while you're doing a multitude of other things, which is just kind of more satisfying. I have started recording. You might have noticed.
Yeah, I see.
So I have on the other side, in across the water, shall we say, I've got Ruben from Laser, as in lasers in the helmets, not laser as in like on the head of a shark, laser gonna, you know, kill something. But so you've been at Laser for 4 years, and you're 26, which makes me feel really old. I wish I was 26 still. I'm definitely not. I turned 30 in December. That was pretty scary. And
that's still okay. That's still okay.
I mean, it's better than 31, isn't it?
True. But I think it is. It's like it's the step, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, 30's the new 20, maybe. I don't know. I'm kind of like, I don't know. I was like shitting it when I got to 30, when I was getting to 30, and then I got to 30, and I was like, it's actually no different. Obviously, it's no different. Like, but you know, it's like one of those things that you get sort of like wrapped up off in your head about growing old and everything.
I think you need to get used to it a little bit. Maybe when you're 32, 33, then. Yeah, you start to looking to 40. My God.
Let's not think about that one. So you've been with Laser now for 4 years, which is, that's awesome. Like, I mean, I'd imagine working for a company with such like heritage must be really interesting. Like, Laser's been manufacturing now for over 100 years, isn't it?
Yeah. And 2019 was our 100 years anniversary, so you're right.
So, yeah, over 100 years then. And, like, helmet design has obviously changed quite a lot in that time. Also, like, I guess the expertise in, like, aerodynamics and weight, all that kind of it has all changed so much over that 100 time period. But, like, what was it that Laser did to celebrate 100 years?
Well, that's a good question. Actually, of course, that's more or less something we do from marketing perspective. But if we look to what we did as a R&D or as Laser from R&D, we worked on the Century helmet. We were just chatting already a little bit about it because I think you get a helmet.
I've got one in my hand right now.
All right. So do you want me to explain? Because I really like that thing. We try to put as much innovation in our product as possible. So we want to share our expertise somehow and our experience, and we really try to embody that in the product. And that's what we basically did on the Century. And that helmet was then introduced on Eurobike in 2018. So actually not really a little bit too early on that one, but once it was the 1st of January, we introduced the product with a lot of videos and also with the teams we were working with and the riders. So it was a really nice year.
Yeah, it's like what I like about it, as we were just talking about earlier, is I went on my first ride of it this weekend, and the weather here in the UK was terrible this weekend. We had like flash thunderstorms and stuff. Yeah. So what I really liked, which is, I don't know if it is I presume it wasn't an intentional feature, but the whole, like, you know, the flipping of the front vent, which is like obviously to do with helping with cooling and then aerodynamics, but also when it's raining, it keeps your head dry.
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah, so it's the twist cap you're talking about. But you're right. So I think you also know our Z1, but you're now riding with the Genesis as well, right?
Yeah.
So on the Genesis, we also have the aero shell. I'm not sure if you got the aero shell as well. It's like a thin PC sheet you can click on your helmet, and we call it the aero shell since it is used to be faster when riding that product. But somehow we also often use the name all-weather shell. So you can use it during a rainy day. So it's indeed taking away some rain, but also when it's really sunny, did not get burned, you know. So I can imagine that the twist cap somehow is also referring to that one as well.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised of how much it helped. It was hail and rain on Saturday when I was riding. I went out for a little spin and it just started hailing and raining, and I was like, I'm gonna switch it around just to protect my head a little bit more. And you know, you lose so much heat from your head, which in a hot, it, you know, you want a vented helmet on a hot day to, you know, help you lose the heat so you don't overheat. But equally, on a really cold day, like I've found, like, aerodynamic helmets are very good because it keeps you warmer. It's a benefit that no one seems to talk about.
Yeah, I don't think they know about it. Huh? They are always claiming that the aero helmet is not aerodynamic. Not comfortable enough from thermal heat perspective. Mm-hmm. So it's also a thing we are working on really hard to get those products better ventilated. But in the winter, it's for sure an advantage, and that's why I think that for the Century, which is somehow an aerodynamic helmet as well, but also for the Bullet, the Bullet 2.0, a little bit more expensive, high-end aerodynamic road helmet as well. We also have the advantage that you can click it open or twist it and use it as you want.
Yeah, it's just nice that there's that little feature. It really helps. And it's easy to do when you're on the ride. Like when you're out riding, it's very easy to adjust yourself.
Yeah. And I also think it's a little bit perception, because most people think that when they are wearing an open helmet, like the Genesis is, for example, they believe that they are ventilated. And in this one, for the Genesis, I can confirm it's a really ventilated helmet. But for the Century and the Bullet 2.0, we managed it somehow to make it also very ventilated product as well. Actually, I started at Laser, as you were right, 4 years ago. I did my master thesis from the university. I did that Laser, and it was on comfort. Yeah. And what actually happened is that we made the current Bullet way better ventilated, and which end up in the Bullet 2.0. Mm-hmm. So I can also say that the Bullet 2.0 is a pretty ventilated helmet as well.
So what of the helmets is your favorite of the current range?
Well, I think right now it's the Genesis. But it's easy to say that I like a helmet, a high-end helmet, the most. Because I like to cycle myself, and And then, of course, I'm riding such kind of helmet. But it's also really hard to point out one helmet from our product portfolio, because we are making so much different kind of products for different kind of target groups that it's very hard to compare a high-end road helmet with a low-end urban sport product as well. And also, yeah, these kind of products are pretty nice products on its own. So if I'm talking about really a high-end product, I think right now it's the Genesis. But we also have, for example, €35 compact helmet, which is if you really look look into detail on the construction of the product, it's pretty smart designed. And of course, I'm looking to the product from a product perspective, but also those kind of products have their own benefits
I would say the Genesis for me, I think, is like one of the best looking helmets at the moment. And then I'm very lucky to have a very special one, which is the bronze one.
Actually, the first one.
Is that the first one?
Yeah. So we introduced the product on the World Championships last year. And then it was indeed that colorway, that graphic.
It's beautiful. It's just like, it's quite different to any other helmet that I've seen in that colorway. And it's the helmet that I wore at the Atlas Mountain race. And I've struggled a bit with helmets in the past with like comfort. And it's so, so light that I didn't really notice I was wearing it at points, which is really, really good. And in that bronze, it just looks, it's super smart. Like, the amount of people have like messaged me going, oh, where can I find that colorway? And I'm like, hey, you can't. You can't. In a horrible way, but you can't find it. Like, it's very, very lucky to get my hands on one, to be honest with you. The Genesis is a really smart helmet, but that's a name that's been in the Laser family as a helmet for quite a while, hasn't it? Am I right in thinking it existed as a different, completely different helmet before, didn't it?
Yeah, actually, so I think one of the main benefits of the product you have now, it's the RollSys. So it's a system on top. It really makes the product comfortable to wear from a physical comfort point of view. And the first product we introduced with the original RollSys, so this is the advanced RollSys, it was the first Genesis we made, and that was really the Genesis, because I think it was one of the first products that Tom Bona was wearing back then, that made the company Laser very big in Belgium as well, of course.
I mean, if Tom Bona's wearing it, any Belgians kind of lap that up, aren't they?
Yeah, as world champion, so.
Yeah, I mean, he's a bit of a legend in his own right at the end of the day, isn't he?
Yeah, and especially in Belgium, of course.
That's one of the things that I mean, you're Dutch. Cycling has obviously, I feel like for you guys as Dutch, cycling has had a real, like in the last couple of years, it feels like it's really taken off again.
Yeah, for sure. But it also depends a little bit on the riders who are good these days. A lot of Dutch people who are just really good in cycling. I think that's maybe a trend we see a couple of years now. But like if you compare it with Belgium, it's really in their heritage. It's a little bit different from the Dutchies.
Yeah, completely. Like in Belgium, it's like how I try and describe it to friends of mine. Like I normally go out for the classics. Yeah. I normally do like the Flanders weekend and then stay for Paris-Roubaix as well. And like how I try to describe to some of my friends what like Belgian cycling fans are like as an equivalent in the UK. And the closest thing I could think of was like really nice football fans.
They're always happy and they're drinking a lot. It's like they're it's like a natural party day somehow. The Tour of Flanders is the most important day of the year for most of them.
And I always go and I watch it on the Quamon. I've actually got in front of me, I've got one of the Quamon beer glasses, which is like, so they released this beer called Quamon, which is the same percentage. Same percentage as the average gradient of the Quamon climb, so 6.6%. And then the base of it is like cobbles. It's a really nice glass. But yeah, like it's definitely like, you know, as you say, like the cyclocross season as well is massive for Belgium. Equally, you guys, I mean, you've got a pretty good cyclocross rider, I think. I'm not sure. I think it's all right.
I think so. Yeah, true.
Yeah, he knows how to ride a bike. I mean, I don't even need to say who it is.
Nope. Yeah. And I think you're talking about Mathieu right now or not?
Yeah.
Could it be different? Yeah, he was riding with the Genesis as well. And I think he loved the Z1 the most back in the last couple of years.
Yeah,
but apparently he's also pretty good riding on the road as well, isn't he?
He's all right. He's won a few big races, hasn't he?
Oh, man. Yeah, it's really unfortunate for him that this year there was no Olympic Games.
Yeah.
Because, I think he can wait another year. Maybe his competitors are afraid that next year he will be better on the MTB as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, it's hard to look past him in a hell of a lot of races, isn't it, right now? Like on everything, cross, road, mountain bike. Like I was thinking about this recently. Like you look at all these guys that have come across from, it's not a new thing for riders to come across from cyclocross to road. Like there's a lot of pros that have done it in the past, but it just so happens to be a new thing that there's a crop of incredibly talented cyclocross riders who have come in and just like smashed it on the road. Like you look at Wout van Aert as well, like his time trialing's been insane. Like he's been an incredible time trialist recently. And I was watching the Tour de France from last year when Wout was racing. And unfortunately had a really bad crash, but my God, that guy, like he was just solid. I'm a big Wout fan. Like I've always thought he's an incredible rider as a cross rider. But then when he's obviously gone to Jumbo-Visma, it's like, wow, okay, he's a much more complete package as a rider in that team, but can time trial, can sprint, can be a lead out, seems to be able to climb quite well. Like it's not new that riders are coming from across and onto the road, but it does seem to be a thing at the moment that there's this very, very, very good caliber of riders that are transferring across right now. Tom Pidcock's another example, like from the British side, like he's been junior world TT champ, and he's like riding. It's the first season that he's ridden in the seniors for cyclocross. It was, and like he did great. Like he had a really good season. Like.
And it's not that they are only good in riding classics or so. They can do everything. It seems that they're I'm not sure what it is. Of course, they can. Their steering capacity is pretty good. They are really well. They are one together with the bicycle. You know.
So yeah.
They really much. Feel it. But seeing Wout doing the sprint in the Tour de France, it's hard to believe.
Yeah, I mean, he's a big guy as well. That's what people forget. Like, there's a lot of him. Like, and he gets over the climb still. So I guess, like, tying up with that, like, we could talk at Jumbo-Visma. They are, I think, I was doing this research recently, looking at, like, World Tour team budgets, yeah? And obviously, at the moment, the team with the biggest budget is Ineos. Yeah, we all know that. And you look at this is the 2019 team budgets. Ineos was expected to be $25 million. Second place was Astana, which was expected to be $14 million. And you look at Jumbo-Visma, they're at $10 million. So they're quite a bit down the list of the World Tour teams. But you look at that, or I look at that anyway and think that Jumbo-Visma is probably the team – of the Grand Tour focused teams that I think is probably the one that can challenge Ineos.
Yeah, especially when you look last year, this was it was incredible. I think they had a really good. It was, I think all the Grand Tours, they did a pretty good job. And yeah. In the end, it was of course the Vuelta that they which they won. And, yeah. And I also think they will grow as a team this year, maybe next year. This year will be difficult, of course. Mm-hmm. I hope we will see some cycling in August. And even together with Tom Dumoulin in the team now.
So cool. So how much, like, and it's the same, like, obviously Laser works with British Cycling as well. That relationship's been going for a very long time. How useful is it from your perspective as a, you know, with your working on the product development side for Laser, having those kind of riders available as assets to help, I guess, give feedback and opinions? Do you send those guys like test helmets of new products coming out to get an opinion on them, that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's something we do for sure. But it's even earlier in the process. Because if we only send them a sample, those guys are really letting us push the limits, you know.
Yeah.
They do that for themselves, and they cannot accept something different from their partners. And from that perspective, they are actually the most difficult target group of all. So if we just send them a sample and then they will give their comments, yeah, we can never get that done on time. So we try to integrate them way earlier in the process. Actually, we start our product development with defining a briefing. And in that briefing, we also point out some riders. If we are talking about a high-end product, we point out some riders and we get in contact with them and we talk with them what they want. And from there on, we already try to integrate them in the process even before we actually start making a product.
Nice. And does that, and then when you're, I guess, like, for me, something that I don't understand it. I'm going to give it a try and understand it. How is it then you'd go down to design a helmet? Like, what's the process from the start point, where I'm guessing it's like a meeting around a table, to the finished product? What is that? How does that process work for designing a new product?
Yeah. So actually that's right. So normally we just have a 3-year roadmap, but some things can change down the road. You know, as well, we see an opportunity on the market, and this could be a replacement of just the current helmet, which is in our product portfolio for a couple of years now. But it can also be like a new price point, or as in a gap on our product portfolio, or we just see a change in behavior of cyclists. We see more urban cyclists these days, and then we try to find ways to reach those target groups as well. Mm-hmm. And from there on, we start with the briefing, which I already mentioned before, which is actually like the fundament of our whole project. So we define the target group and estimate the price point, and then roughly try to describe technical and product data. So I started the briefing, and then indeed we go on the table with the most important people for that dedicated project. Mm-hmm. And then we just find out what we need to get a good product.
And I guess it's like, then it's a continual like case of refining, refining. And then when you've got, I'm guessing you do testing like virtually initially, like, so through like CFD testing, virtual wind tunnels, that kind of stuff, and then produce prototypes, test them again, find out the strengths, find out the weaknesses, backwards and forwards. That seems to be quite similar to when I was talking with Cervelo, and we talked about how the process of like developing a bike is that you start on the computer and you slowly backwards and forwards things to continually keep refining it. And eventually you get to a point where you're kind of happy, but then you need to take it another 10 steps onwards.
Yeah. No, that's for sure. So actually, when we finish the briefing, we introduce to the designated designer, just sometimes it's me. In the end, I'm mostly also following up other projects. So sometimes I do it as a project manager as well. And then we introduce the designer to the project. And like most designers do, and for me as well, I just start with making 2D drawings. So just sketching on paper. And when it comes a little bit more in detail, I start to draw on my drawing tablet. And for me personally, I would like to go as soon as possible to 3D shapes. So I'm just making 50 scale mockups out of foam, really, carving just by hand with the scalpel. And and I like to iterate a lot on that. So and if I do that very early in the process, you really see like the right proportions, the good shapes, the fans, the design lines, these kind of things.
Nice.
And and then I make just like a couple of iterations, and that's what I that's the first step that I show it to the team and ask their judgment as well. And in case of a high end product, that's also the first step already that we try to introduce it to the pro teams.
Nice. It's just like I feel like it's a. Like helmet design, there's a lot of, for me, when I look at helmets and like across all different brands of helmets, there's something very, there's a lot of connections. And to me personally, I see connections and tie-ups with like automotive design, like car design. There's a lot of fluid shapes and generally, you know, helmets are quite an elegant object. At the end of the day, it saves your life primarily, but there's a lot of, I think, especially over the last, it feels like the last like sort of 5 or so years that the helmets have actually become quite beautiful objects in their own right. Like we've said about the Genesis, the Century helmet, they're like very elegant products in their own mindset, which is great to see.
Yeah, for sure. So that's a little bit the edge we are on, right? So
yeah.
On the one hand, we want to create a safe product, and on the other hand, it should look nice in the first place as well. So, and important on that is that, so you are a cyclist, so for you it's clear you want to wear a helmet when you go outside, but apparently there are still people who are riding outside without a helmet. I'm not sure why, but also for those kind of people, we at least need to make products that even if they don't care about their own safety, they want to ride with it because it looks cool.
Yeah, exactly. I think that there's liking the aesthetics of something is as important. That, you know, if something looks good and it encourages someone to then wear a helmet, it's a win-win situation, you know. Because I mean, I'm someone that would never ride outside without a helmet. And part of the reasoning for that for me is like, so my dad used to be a professional motorbike racer. And he, you know, he was a professional motorbike racer and sidecar racer. He used to be British champ, like world champ. Like he was a very, very good racer. He lives in the Isle of Man, so he's mad. He's done the Isle of Man TT. And
nice.
Yeah, madman. Ironically, text me tonight or this evening just asking about getting an e-bike, which is really cool. So I'm going to help him out with that. But he had a very unfortunate accident. I think it's 13 years ago now, where he was racing and he basically got knocked off his bike in a race and ended up in a coma. And he would be dead if he wasn't wearing a helmet. And it's obviously motorbike, push bike, there's a difference in the speeds, but because of that, like I understand how valuable a helmet is. A motorbike helmet saved my dad's life. So to me, even at a slower speed, you could still come off in the same, you know, even if you're riding like, I don't know, 15 kph, 10 kph, whatever, you can still come off and just hit your head in just the wrong way.
That's it. So apparently people still think they can pretend that everything is fine if they are not wearing a helmet. But you can have very bad accidents, and maybe not because you are riding that fast, but you're also, yeah, right in the traffic most of the time.
Yeah, so, exactly.
You're also depending on other people in the traffic, like cars or whatever.
I mean, I know, like, London, I wouldn't say is the safest or best place to cycle in Europe that I've ridden. I've always been really impressed when I've gone to, like, to Belgium or to the Netherlands or to France. Like, every European country I've ridden, Spain, the, like, especially actually the Netherlands, I think, was the one that really stood out for me. I went to Amsterdam, and that was the first time I'd ever been. It was in November last year. And one, the cycle lanes are incredible there. And just the general riding's really good. I mean, you don't have many hills, but you've got a good headwind. So I guess that's kind of a hill. But, like, anyway, I feel like in Europe, like, you've got so much more of a history with cycling than maybe we have in the UK. I'm not sure, but it feels like there's more of like an understanding to the importance of safety and of helmets as well, compared to here in the UK anyway.
Yeah, it also depends a little bit how your city is designed as well. I truly believe in behavior by design. So if you create a city that is made to cycle, people afford and are there to cycle in their cities. And I also think that's a pretty good thing, because if it is what they are saying is that it is rated as the most fun, efficient way and the most joyful to ride a bike, but it's very often still avoided. People prefer to go by car to go to their work, homework, and these kind of things. So I think it would be a very good shift. And also, if I hear your father wants to buy an e-bike, I hope those e-bikes are also replacing the cars somehow in the future.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, from what I've noticed in the UK is that the e-bike market seems to be the fastest growing market in cycling, followed by, like, off-road, like, gravel riding. They seem to be the two fastest growing, like, points of the cycling industry in the UK, which is amazing, because, like, at the end of the day, more people on bikes is good for everyone. Like, it's good for the environment, it's good for the roads being quieter, it's good for people's understanding of road users. Like, I was queuing up outside a bike shop the other day to buy a cassette, I was listening to the conversation of two guys in front of me. And they were both new cyclists. They're very open that they were both new cyclists in this conversation. I was, like, listening into it. I probably shouldn't have been, but I did anyway. And one guy was saying, I used to be one of those guys that used to overtake cyclists really close when I was driving because I thought it was funny. And he was like, and now I'm that cyclist and I understand that was stupid. And so, like, that's where it's good that more people are riding, because people are understanding, like, a cyclist is just a human. It's just a human, like, it's a person riding a bike. It's weird how, like, saying someone is a cyclist seems to, like, change this perception of what a human is riding a bike. Like, I don't know. It's one of those things that at the moment, like, a cyclist, like, you don't say it's a person driving a car, isn't it? You wouldn't say you're a car driver as such, like, I don't know.
No. They always say that. Maybe that's a shift we need to make.
Yeah, I think so, and I feel like we're going in that direction definitely. And, like, with all of the, you know, the COVID situation that's gone on, it feels like more people are open to the idea of commuting via a bike or walking, for example, especially in the cities, as opposed to driving for, you know, 5 or 10 kilometers and it takes you like an hour and a half when you could do that in half of the time on a bicycle, even less than half the time. So it feels like
as we were just discussing how that we see opportunities on the market. I think, like, what's happening right now and cities that are rapidly changed, like, I heard that Milan is putting a lot of bike lanes in their cities. It's a very good trend.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So I've got on a bit of a off topic of where I was intending to go. Like the next, the next thing I kind of wanted to talk about though was like the testing process with helmets. So what kind of, obviously, there's very strict testing that happens on helmets. At the end of the day, they can save someone's lives, like I mentioned about my dad. But what kind of testing do you guys go into? Like, how is the testing done with laser helmets?
Yeah, so that's a very big part from our process. So I think it just ended that I was making small mock-ups. And mm-hmm. then somehow I go to a one skill 101 mock-up. And mm-hmm. the product we are scanning. And from there on, we build a complete CAD file from scratch. Mm-hmm. And then we have like our rapid prototyping process. So you're making 3D prints. We really mm-hmm. have an actual product. And then already we start with doing the first testing. And that's more or less putting it on our head and how it looks, how it feels, and, mm-hmm. and how it is perceived. And at the moment, we have like a pretty decent CAD file and we have a good 3D print. We use both the actual product and the CAD data we use in our testing. So on one hand, we are doing a lot of simulations, and with simulations, I'm talking about doing aero testing in an simulation environment, thermal testing in a simulation environment. And I think we as Laser are pretty proud that we have a very good software to do like safety testing and impact testing as well. So we can do simulations to see how a product behaves. And that's something we do really early in the process. So maybe a lot of brands, or maybe not a lot of brands, but what we did in the past is that we make the product first and we just do it based on our experience. And mm-hmm. once we have the model, then we're doing the actual testing. But what we do now, even before we're making the actual product, we can already do our impact testing by means of simulation. And to do that, we can already create a pretty safe product even before we actually make it.
Yeah, because I'd imagine that when you then go into production or pre-production, like that's an expensive situation. It's an expensive part of it at the end of the day. Like you want to make sure that the product is tested to the maximum level that you can before.
Yeah, so I just mentioned it already when we were talking about the pro riders. If we just send them an actual sample and then ask for their feedback, and they will give us a load of comments, it's really hard to change it on that stage of the process. And that's the same in our in-house testing. If we then found out the issue, it's really hard to change it because you really need to change the mold, and it's a lot of reverse engineering. So we try to make our product already as safe as possible just before we actually start to making toolings.
Yeah, nice. Super cool. So I'm fascinated by that side of it anyway, because of my background. Like, I just find the whole process of designing anything really interesting. Like, it's nice to hear it from you as a designer for the brand as well. Definitely. So I was thinking about something else as well. This is, so I've noticed anyway, with like, I do time trials. I'm a big time trialist. I race a lot of them, obviously not at the moment, but like, there's been this real trend, hasn't there, with time trialing helmets, of going from very much of having a massive tail on them to a more, you know, a much more shorter tail. So, you know, it's for me, it's quite interesting, like how we've seen that develop and change. And that's in its own right is quite, I guess, is quite relevant now with cycling helmets. So like we look at like, I think it was the Wasp, like quite a few years ago, was really, really long tail. And then you look at comparison to like the Victor now, which is much more compact. That obviously, like, just through the refinement of the design and understanding aerodynamics, I guess.
I think the big difference between the design purpose we had on the Wasp and we had on the Victor is that we make the Wasp pretty fast for within the wind tunnel. Mm-hmm. And it's still a very fast helmet when you use it on your bike or on the track. But I think the victor is better in the actual situation. So because we also take side winds and moving of your hat, or when you take a corner and you need to get into speed again, these kind of things we also took into account in designing the victor helmet.
Yeah, so it's much more of a responsive in real world conditions, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I think that was really the starting point. We make a very fast helmet within our window. But we see that if we look to the actual use of the product, we can still make another step. We can still make this product better. And that was even both on the track as on the road. Because we also see that the product is often used on the track.
I remember when the Wasp came out, and I remember British Cycling using the Wasp. And I remember it was the world champion, the track world champs, which was in London. I can't remember what year it was, but Jason Kenny was wearing the Laser Wasp and the British Cycling one, which was like the navy blue with the red on it. I always thought it looked really cool. And like Jason Kenny's got quite a distinctive nose, and it like very distinctively sticks out through the visor. And how he races on the track is like he looks with his head like over his shoulder to look at whoever he's sprinting against to watch him, because he likes to race from the front. And I always thought the shape of the Wasp was a really, like, because it was quite different compared to a lot of other helmets at its time. It was stubbier than a lot, but also, I don't know, the shape of it was very distinguished and very noticeable, I found personally. And yeah, it's one of those ones that I always look back at it and remember, like Jason Kenny racing at the Track World Champs, and thinking, "Yeah, that's cool. It's a cool helmet."
Yeah, and that was without or with the tail? I think without.
I think it was without. Yeah.
Yeah, because if you look to the side and then you're wearing the very big tail, then I can tell you it's not that fast, of course.
Yeah, because the big tail is very long on it, isn't it? Like it really extends the length of the helmet, which I guess that's like if you're like doing pursuit, for example, much more where you're not going to be looking around, are you? At the end of the day, you're going to be focused on following the wheel in front of you on the track and the pursuit mode, as opposed to like, you know, a track sprinter is going to be looking over his shoulder or looking around trying to see where his competitor is.
Yeah,
I'm fascinated by, like, for me as someone that time trials, like that side of it has always been very fascinating to me. Like when I did some wind tunnel testing for me. And this was when I was, this was 2018, I think, or 19. I think it was like the start of 2019, end of 2018. I can't quite remember, but I did a series of testing, and like some of it was indoors, some of it was like in a wind tunnel, and some of it was outdoors on an outdoor velodrome. So we could test like straight line speed, and also we could test side angle speed.
Mm-hmm.
And my position's quite unique. Like I ride with a very high hand position, and I like shrug right down into it. And we actually found that the Wasp, the long tail one, for me, worked really, really well. Because of how it sat on my back.
And it also depends a little bit how your head is in comparison with your shoulders. So are you really with your head in between your shoulders, or is it a bit above of it?
Yeah, my head, I proper like tuck my head down.
Yeah.
So with the long-tailed Wasp, what we found was because I dropped my head, because how my position is designed is like it's a high hand position, but then I have like the cups that I have for the my arms are like they're like a cup, like I sort of like slump down into them, like mm-hmm. So I proper drop my head down, and basically when I'm riding I look over my knuckles and my knuckles on my hand, and because of that it meant that my position with a long tail Wasp is almost seamless into my back.
It sounds as a fast position.
It is a fast position. It is a really fast position, especially for like a 24-hour race. It's super fast.
Yeah.
And we refined it quite a lot here and there. And I've got like a, we're working on my new TT bike at the moment, which will incorporate that position, which will be really, really interesting, actually. It's like a, the new TT bike is a Cervelo P series, but we're doing it, I'm having the extensions 3D printed. So that'll be pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. And you did not ride with the Victor yet?
No, I haven't ridden with the Victor yet. Yeah, I've not. I've received it last week. So
because your story is pretty right. If you have a very good time trial position, I think the Wasp with the tail is really fast. And actually, yeah, we made the Victor more or less for a general position as well. But then we found out in the wind tunnel with the best riders of the world that the Victor was still beating the Wasp in all different kind of positions, which was surprising us as well a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's great to know because, for me, the advantage of a shorter tail, especially for the longer TTs, so like the 12 hours and the 24 hours, is that length of time, you can't sit in the same position like dead straight and dead static all the time. Like there's points where you need to just like sit up for a bit, mm-hmm, or like move your neck because you get neck cramp. And having the shorter tail, I think is better for allowing, like, you're not going to create such a sail or a fin, so to speak, if you move your head too much. Yeah, it's super cool.
Yeah, and that together with the frontal area, so we make the body pretty slim. Mm-hmm. Yeah, then you end up with a fast helmet in different kind of positions.
Super cool, really, really cool. I'm literally just looking. While we're chatting, I'm looking at photos from like the Track World Champs when like Bradley Wiggins and Cavendish were doing the Madison together and stuff, and they were in the Wasps, and they just looked really badass.
Yeah, especially with the dark visor, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean the dark visor, the mirrored visor, they all look great, don't they? They make you look like an alien, which is cool.
Uh huh. It's a bit where the name has come from, I think. Like the it looks cool, the Wasp.
Yeah.
We had that design with the lines on it, which then it really looks like a Wasp.
Yeah, the yellow, and there's a yellow and black one, isn't there?
Yeah, that one. Then together with the tripwire on top, it was a very cool graphic.
So the tripwire, that's basically like it's like a line that runs across the top, and is that designed just to like flick the wind or the air in a different direction with the airflow?
Yeah, so actually what happened in a certain position, the air is tended to go off your helmet. So yeah, like it's a pretty difficult story with turbulent and laminar air. But at a certain moment, the air wants to tends to go off the helmet, and the tripwire creates another step to keep the air as long as possible onto the helmet.
That's cool.
Which is an advantage for your aerodynamics.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it at the end of the day, it all helps with the flow of the air moving around a person. Or, you know, because the head is the most, from what I was told anyway, is like probably one of the most unaerodynamic parts of a human body. Because it's like a pumpkin, isn't it?
Object. And you have some sharp edges or some sharp points, which is for sure not good for aerodynamics. So you need to try to cover as much as possible of your head with a helmet.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, it's any way to make yourself slippery, I guess, at the end of the day, isn't it? Like, we've seen all these advancements in like skin suits when it was Team Sky, and they had that like texture on the skin suits that everyone like complained about at one, I think it's at the Tour de France. Like there's so many, like it fascinates me, like the advancements in that side of cycling and how, you know, how tiny the changes can be to make someone a noticeably faster rider.
Yeah, I even think that you even forget to mention that it's perception as well.
Hmm.
So those guys think that they are really fast. Maybe it's even not the case, but if they truly believe that they are fast with riding that helmet or that suit, and their competitors thinks that those guys are fast as well, it has a psychological aspect as well.
It definitely helps, doesn't it? It definitely does. Like,
if you
think you're fast and you think you're strong, you're in your head, you probably are going to be pretty quick at the end of the day. Like, there's no denying it. You're going to be pretty quick. And it's, I'm just looking at the moment at like photos of like some of the time trialists from like Jumbo Visma and somewhere, but like some of the positions with the newer helmet as well. Like, it's really cool to see. Like, it's just, I'm a geek at time trialing. I find it really fascinating. And I find how it's evolved as well super fascinating. Like, in the UK, we have a big, time trialing's massive in the UK. We love it here. Like, we're obsessed with it. I don't think it's quite the same internationally, but yeah, here we're like all about, it's like you go ride to like the side of an A road, so like a pretty busy road. You go line up for a TT at like 6 o'clock in the morning, and then you do a TT, and then you go back to like some little like village hall, so like a little hut pretty much in the middle of nowhere. Have a really shit coffee or a really shit cup of tea and a bit of cake, and then you're done. That's it. And that's like a weekend thing in the UK. It's really weird. Like, I kind of feel like I'm as a British person who's done it, I'm like, yeah, it's kind of cool. But like, as an outsider in cycling or as a different country, I'd be like, what the fuck are these guys doing?
That's actually what I thought. Yeah. And which ends up that you're also pretty good on the track as well as a country.
Yeah, we're not bad. We're not bad. We haven't done so well in the last year or so. But yeah, we've got a good track record, so to speak, on the track. Time trialists and track riders seem to be where we're pretty good. But I mean, we seem to be doing all right at the Grand Tours at the moment. I mean, we're not quite... It'd be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what happens now with the changes, like the rumors of Chris Froome leaving Ineos, and like, I mean, it's kind of like Bernal is kind of. I feel
really?
Like,
do you really think it will happen?
No, I don't think it will happen.
All right.
I don't think it will happen. I don't know if he can win another Tour de France.
Yeah, but it's still Chris Froome.
That's the thing. That's exactly the thing. Like, you can't write him off. Like, it'll be so interesting to see, like, if the Grand Tours happen this year, which I sincerely hope they do, if they happen and Ineos go to the Tour de France with Bernal, Thomas and Froome. I mean, it could be, it's otherwise going to be, it's going to go two ways. It's going to be amazing to watch, or it's going to be so boring. It's going to be one or the other. I really hope it's amazing.
I would agree with the last one if Jumbo-Visma was not there.
Yeah. It's going to be.
They have a pretty strong team this year as well, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the caliber of riders there. I mean, getting Dumoulin, I mean, he's one of my favorite riders. Like, I really would like to see him win another Grand Tour, definitely. Mm-hmm. And that team has just got like, yeah, it's probably, they probably are, as I said earlier, the second strongest, I think, are probably the next strongest team. But what's so interesting is that they've done it on half the budget. Like,
yeah.
So there's a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah. Anyway. And what I think is that, yeah, they could. I think they put all their hope for the Tour as well, which will create a very, very interesting Tour de France.
Completely agree. Anyway, I know there's obviously things you can't say, obviously, but is that I think you can say that is what's next for Laser. Is there anything exciting we're allowed to talk about?
So that's a very difficult question.
we are
working on a, so actually our product development timeline is about 2 years. So mm-hmm. when we were talking about the the Genesis, which is for you the latest helmet on the road or on the market. I'm already talking about products for model year 22, so that's something we are going to introduce in 2022.
Yeah, quirky.
Yeah, but yeah, so what I can say is that we are working on some very cool products. And yeah, you of course are only focused on the high-end models.
Mm-hmm.
Some cool stuff going on, especially what you say. We were talking about road helmets, aerodynamic helmets. We see that there's a lot going on there, and also on the time trial. So cool lots things coming up.
Yeah, you're going to bring out a new Max Plus helmet as well. I love them.
Yeah. Do you?
Yeah, it's great. My nephew's got one.
I think that's something we often forget about laser, because we have a lot of innovation and we put a lot of effort in our high-end road models.
Yeah.
But if you look to our product portfolio, I think we are doing things that that we really can compete with very big other brands in cycling and helmet business.
Yeah, my nephew, who is quite young, has one of the Max Plus helmets. He's got the one with the car on it.
Ah, yeah. Oh, those graphics are fantastic.
Yeah, the car and like the flames on it. And his dad, they go out riding on their bikes. They're like, he's young. He's very young. But I was like, I remember I was chatting to his dad the other day, and I was like, what? He's like, oh, I've got Max, who's my nephew. He's like, oh, I've got my new bike. I was like, oh, awesome. Like, he's like, yeah, I've got my helmet to match as well. And he sent me a photo, and it was the Max Plus.
So great.
And I was like, that's awesome. That is damn cool.
Yeah, it's pretty fun, because I think on the road we are well known, but for kids' helmets as well, I think we are one of the big brands over there. I think there are other brand opportunities for us where we can grow.
The
sports segment and the MTB as well. We tried to dive in that market as well the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But for the kids' helmets, we are doing some really great stuff. It's also a little bit the idea we have, right? So you want to grow with laser. So I hope your cousin your nephew once will ride with that very fast new TT helmet as well, if it will be there once.
Yeah, I mean, you look, we can all hope. He's only young. He's a bit obsessed with riding his bike at the moment, so it's quite cool. And then he's got two brothers.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, there's the three of them. There's three brothers, and they're all going to be on bikes very soon, I think. I'm sure I'll get updates from Dad very shortly, as they all slowly get their new bikes, effectively, which is quite sweet.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
So I'm gonna. You've already listened to the podcast, so you might be prepared for this.
a little bit. Because so I know what you're going to say now.
Oh, yeah, there you go. So go on. I'm going to ask you to give me 5 hacks or life tips to the listeners.
Yeah, so luckily you tell me, because if you just tell this to me now, it would be too difficult to find 5 different ones. Who decided to go for 5? Was 1 or 2 or 3 not enough?
Well, I went for 5 because of that exact reason. Because like, people can do like 1 or 2 quite easily, but like when you get to like 3, people like go, oh, and then when you get to 5, people are like, 5 is quite hard. And it means that there's normally 1 or 2 that are very, very good. And then there's normally 1 or 2 that are hilarious because they're not so good. And that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's true. But even I think about it a little bit, not that much actually, but 5 is a lot. I try to find one which we just discussed as well. I think one of the main things I learned the last years is that you really, it's from design perspective, this one, that you really show your product during the process. So you are not the ID. So there to show what you're doing and there to show it to people, and don't be afraid to get some bad comments, because it can just make you make better and great products.
Yeah, nice. It's a bit like, I completely agree with that. Like when I worked in architecture, like the process of the design is where you thrash. You can't be too precious about it. You know, you have to allow other people to input and help you grow and advance a product. Definitely. Completely agree.
Yeah, and we are often too afraid to show maybe what you're going to do, because in your head it is already something, but on paper it's not yet. Yeah. And what you show is only the thing which is on paper, and it's not what's in your head. So that's why people and designers tend to maybe wait a little bit longer before they show it. But yeah. Do it. It's really a hack. You better do it.
Yeah, yeah, completely agree. Nice. Right, you've got four more.
Oh, man. I think another one is that you just, keep moving. Just do something, trial and error. Sometimes when you're looking back, it was not the easiest way to do it, but just keep moving. Trial and error, doing things. People are also often think that they better think about it, what to do, but sometimes you just do it. Trial and error, back and forth.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that. Okay. Number three.
Man, three. Let me think about this one. I have a nice quote right down here. It's from Wayne Gretzky. Do you know Wayne Gretzky?
I recognize the name, but I don't know why I recognize
it's
the name.
It's a high hockey player, but it was a quote once used by Steve Jobs, and that skate where the puck is going, not where it's been.
Love that.
So things never exist in a vacuum. So you know that if you just do something which another brand did in the past, you will never be the best one. You need to try to be innovative, and that's how you can make great good products, because otherwise you're always 1 or 2 years behind of your biggest competitors.
Great. I like that one.
And another one I can say is just learning by doing. Just do stuff, and that will make you better. Don't be afraid to do stuff, and learning by doing is one of my mottos in my life. Just do it.
Look, you told me that this was hard. You've already done four.
Is there anyone? Oh, one to go.
Yeah.
Actually, I'll only write down two, so they are just random coming up in my mind. But I think this is the one I really need to end with, and that's, we discussed it earlier, wear a helmet. I think that's the number one life hack. If you go cycling, helmets are cool, helmets are safe, helmets can be fast. So wear a helmet.
I mean, what better way to end on, you know?
I think so too.
Safety tips. Basically, do you know what? Like one of the most, something that's come up a few times during this podcast as a hack or a tip was basically, don't be a dick. Yeah. and prime example of don't be a dick is wear a helmet, keep yourself safe.
Well, I think we should do it that way. Don't be a dick, wear a helmet.
Yeah.
After this podcast, I will write that one down.
Oh, brilliant. Ruben, thank you so much for your time. Like, it's been a really good to chat to you. And also, I have to say thank you to Laser for supporting me. Like, it's a real honor to get to work with such a great brand with so much heritage and history and be involved with that. And to also get the opportunity to talk to you yourself, Ruben, as someone from the design side of Laser, like, it's really, really cool for me. So massive thank you to you guys, and I'm gonna call it a wrap there. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me, and for you as well. Keep going, keep moving. No, you're doing really nice things, and I like to listen to it, so keep going and wear a helmet.
Cheers, dude.
Cheers, have a nice evening. Bye.
Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.